So, the marketing copy for the device we're taking a deep dive into today has this one line that it honestly just made me stop and reread it a couple of times.
Oh, the shield and sword line.
Yeah, exactly. It says, "The standard Sentry is a shield, the Sovereign Sentry Pro is a sword." And, usually when we talk about network security with you all, it's entirely defensive. You lock the doors, you close the ports, you hide behind a firewall and just kind of hope nobody notices you.
Right, you build a big wall and basically pray it holds against the barbarian horde. That's the standard model for anyone listening who's ever set up a home Wi-Fi network.
Right. But this suggests something else entirely. We're looking at the Sovereign Sentry, specifically the Pro Edition today. And the premise here is that for $899, you get this black box that doesn't just protect your network, it actually actively attacks it.
It's a complete pivot in philosophy, really. We're moving away from what we'd call passive defense over to offensive security. I mean, it's kind of the difference between wearing a bulletproof vest and actively patrolling your own perimeter.
But nearly a grand for a router. I mean, my ISP gives me a little plastic white box for free. So our mission for this deep dive is to figure out if that price tag is pure insanity or if it's actually genius. We're going to tear apart the hardware specs, try to understand this Trinity software stack everyone's whispering about in the forums, and really explain why you'd ever want a computer that tries to hack you.
And to really understand that price and the philosophy behind it, you have to start with the physical object itself. Because looking at the source images and the schematics we have, this does not look like consumer electronics at all. It doesn't look like something you just pull off the shelf at a big box store.
Oh, definitely not. It looks like a prop from like a Ridley Scott movie or something. It's this menacing matte black industrial brick. There are no sleek curves, no friendly little blue LEDs blinking at you. Just heavy metal and these massive vertical cooling fins.
Yeah, it's designed to look a bit hostile, I think, but those visuals aren't just aesthetic choices for the cyberpunk crowd. They're strict engineering requirements. You're looking at a really heavy-duty aluminum chassis where the entire case is functioning as a radiator, and it's built that way because of what they decided to cram inside it.
Which brings us to what the documentation calls the iron, right? The hardware layer. So they swapped out the standard N100 chip that you'd find in the base model for an Intel Core i3 N305. Now, for those of you listening who maybe don't follow processor specs like sports stats, why in the world does a router need that kind of brain?
That is the big question. See, an N100 is perfectly fine for routing traffic. It's efficient, it's low power, it gets the job done. But the i3 N305, that is an 8-core beast with a 3.8 gigahertz turbo boost. Putting that in a home router it's essentially like putting a V8 engine in a golf cart, unless, of course, you plan to tow something very, very heavy.
And what exactly is this router towing?
Virtual machines and deep packet inspection. This device isn't just mindlessly passing data from point A to point B. It is actually stopping every single packet, opening it up, inspecting the contents for malicious code, and then re-encrypting it on the fly. Plus, as we'll get into, it's running local AI models and a full-blown hacking suite. You need raw, massive compute power for that.
And you mentioned the specs earlier.
Yeah.
The source notes mentioned 32 gigabytes of DDR4 RAM and a 2 terabyte NVMe SSD. I mean, those aren't router specs. That's a high-end gaming PC.
Or a server. And honestly, that's what this really is. It's a hyper-converged server that happens to be masquerading as a router. But here's the catch, and it's a huge one from an engineering standpoint. You're putting an 8-core processor and server-grade hardware inside a sealed metal box. There are no fans, zero airflow. The documentation spends a lot of time on what they call the heat challenge.
Right, because if I buy this and put it in my utility closet in Arizona in the middle of July, why doesn't it just melt? Or at the very least, thermal throttle down until it's functionally useless?
It's a totally valid concern. In the industry, we call it thermal saturation. If the silicon chip gets too hot, which is usually right around 100 degrees Celsius at the junction, it slows itself down to save its own life. So to prevent that in a fanless, sealed box, they went with something called Honeywell, PTM 7950.
PTM 7950. That honestly sounds like an experimental chemical weapon or something.
It really does, yeah. It stands for phase change material. And this is fascinating stuff that is usually strictly reserved for really high-end industrial applications or extreme GPU modding. So at room temperature, it's just a solid pad. It sits right between the CPU and the metal case. But as that CPU heats up, specifically right when it hits about 45 degrees Celsius, the material physically changes phase. It turns into a liquid.
Wait, it liquefies inside the router case? That sounds like a short circuit disaster waiting to happen.
Well, just microscopically, it's not like a puddle sloshing around in there. It changes viscosity to fill every single microscopic imperfection or air gap between the silicon chip and the aluminum heatsink. It becomes incredibly efficient at moving heat. Far, far better than your standard thermal paste. And once that heat is transferred to the case, the chimney effect takes over.
The chimney effect. Explain that one.
So those massive vertical fins on the outside of the chassis we talked about, they get hot. And basic physics tells us hot air rises. As that hot air rises up and off the vertical fins, it creates a slight vacuum underneath that pulls cool air up from the bottom of the unit. So the hotter the internal chip gets, the faster the external air moves across the fins. The case itself literally becomes the fan.
So it's a completely silent, solid-state radiator that essentially breathes.
Exactly. It's brilliant engineering. And it absolutely has to be that robust because it has to support what they call the Trinity.
The Trinity. Right. So this is the software stack. You're not just, you know, typing an IP address into your browser and logging into a basic admin page like you would on a Netgear or Linksys router. This thing actually runs Proxmox VE.
Correct. Proxmox is a hypervisor. It allows you to run multiple separate operating systems at the exact same time on one single piece of physical hardware. So when you plug in the Sovereign Sentry Pro and boot it up, you are actually turning on three distinct computers, three virtual machines running simultaneously side by side.
Let's break those three down because this is where that whole sword philosophy really comes into play. First up, the notes outline VM number one, which is called the gatekeeper.
This is your bread and butter networking layer. It runs either PSNs or OPNSense, depending on your preference. This is your actual router. It handles the firewall, the network-wide ad blocking, and the intrusion detection systems, things like Snort or Suricata. It's allocated 4 of those 8 cores and 8 gigs of RAM all to itself.
Which, again, is just massive overkill for standard home routing.
It is. But that overkill is what allows for ultra-high-speed VPN encryption across your entire network without suddenly causing your Netflix stream to buffer. It does the heavy lifting. The gatekeeper is the shield.
Okay, so that's the standard, albeit heavy-duty networking stuff. Then we move to VM number 2, which they call the ledger. And this is where the crypto angle comes in, right?
All right. VM 2 runs the Rios core. And this is where they utilize that massive 2-terabyte NVMe SSD that comes included in the build. It securely stores encrypted shards of data from other users, essentially. You're renting out your excess hard drive space to a decentralized blockchain network.
So the idea is the router actually pays for itself over time.
Theoretically, yes. It performs what's called proof of storage mining. It's a way to generate yield on a device that you have to leave plugged in and turned on 24/7 anyway. So instead of just consuming your electricity, it's actively participating in a decentralized storage network and earning credits.
That is really interesting. It turns a liability, your monthly electricity bill, into a potential asset. But the feature that really justifies the sword tagline, and frankly the one that scares me a little bit, is the third VM. They call it the auditor. And this one is completely exclusive to the Pro model.
This is the massive differentiator. This virtual machine runs Kali Linux.
Okay, for people listening who haven't spent time deep in cybersecurity circles or maybe haven't watched Mr. Robot, what exactly is Kali?
It is the absolute Swiss Army knife for hackers. It's an operating system that comes preloaded out of the box with hundreds of specialized programs designed to break into networks, crack weak passwords, find open vulnerabilities, and exploit databases. It is the gold standard industry tool for penetration testing.
And they deliberately put this inside your home network.
Yes, they do.
That just sounds incredibly dangerous. Like, if I buy this device, am I basically installing a malicious hacker right in my living room?
You are, but it's a hacker that's entirely on your payroll. This is the core concept of red teaming. The device uses automated tools like OpenVAS and Nmap to aggressively scan your own local network. It looks at your smart fridge, your work laptop, your solar inverter, your kid's tablet, and it actively tries to break into them.
So it actually attacks me.
It attacks you so it can explicitly tell you where you are weak. Maybe you bought a cheap wireless printer that still has a default password of admin and admin. Or maybe your smart TV in the living room is running outdated firmware from 2019 that has a known exploit allowing remote viewing. The Sentry finds that vulnerability and alerts you immediately before a real malicious attacker on the internet does.
I mean, I definitely see the utility there. It's totally proactive, but I also immediately see the massive liability. What if I accidentally configure this thing wrong and my router starts running a denial of service attack against the Pentagon? Or even just my neighbor's Wi-Fi? Or what if I get flagged by my ISP as running a botnet?
The manufacturers actually anticipated exactly that scenario. The documentation heavily highlights a risk register. So the Kali VM has what they call a config lock. It is hard-coded at the hypervisor level to only scan private subnets, so IP ranges like 192.168.x.x. It physically cannot route those specific attack tools out through the WAN port to the public internet.
Okay, got it. So it's essentially a cage tiger.
Exactly. It can only eat what is inside its own cage. It's the node that watches the watchman, as they say. Look, most people trust their smart home devices completely blindly. This device trusts absolutely nothing.
Speaking of trust and security, we have to talk about how you actually interface with this thing. Because if it's this locked down and secure, logging in to change a setting must be a nightmare. There's a physical hardware component included right in the box called the sovereign key.
Yes, this is a YubiKey 5C NFC, but it's really important to note that it's not just a blank, generic security key you order off Amazon.
Right. The source notes detail a very specific handshake process that happens at the factory.
Yeah, so at the Node 3 workshop in Arizona, where these units are hand-assembled, a technician physically inserts this specific YubiKey into your specific hardware unit during the build and provisioning process. It generates a totally unique FIDO2 and SSH credential pair. The private key, the actual digital identity required to administer the Proxmox box, is mathematically locked inside that hardware token. It never leaves it.
So if I'm at a coffee shop and I want to log in, but I lose the physical key,
Yeah.
I just can't get in,
Yeah.
even though I have the password memorized.
Correct. You are locked out. It forces a strict model of physical possession, pure passwordless access. If you want to log in to change your firewall rules or just check your crypto mining balance, you have to physically tap that key to the router itself or to the NFC reader on your phone or laptop. What this means is a remote hacker sitting in another country can never, ever get top-level admin access to your router simply because they do not hold the physical object in their hand.
That is pretty hardcore. It totally removes the human element of choosing weak passwords.
Yeah.
But let's play devil's advocate for a second. What if I am the one who screws it up? I mean, they're giving us Kolinux and root access to a hypervisor. If I'm in there tinkering on a Saturday night and I accidentally delete the wrong config file, or I completely brick the operating system, do I just have a $900 matte black paperweight?
That is always the underlying fear with these industrial-grade tools. Usually in the enterprise space, if you break it, you bought it and you have to rebuild it from scratch. But they actually included a failsafe called the Rescue Drive. It's listed as an $89 value, but they just throw it in the box for the Pro Edition.
The break glass drive, right?
I really love that terminology. It's a military-grade, ruggedized USB thumb drive. If you completely brick the entire system, you just plug this drive into one of the USB ports, reboot the hardware, and it automatically runs a recovery script. In about 5 minutes, it completely restores the system to the factory golden image.
But wait, does that wipe the crypto earnings on the Ledger VM? Because that would be tragic.
No, and that is a crucial detail that shows how well thought out this is. The recovery script is smart enough to specifically preserve the Ledger partition where your encrypted wallet data is stored, while only wiping and resetting the core OS layers. It really shows they intimately understand their target user base, people who love to tinker, who will inevitably break things, and who want a fast way to fix them.
So who exactly is that user base? Because almost $900 is a significant investment for a home lab toy, and the technical complexity is incredibly high. The source text actually outlines three specific use cases. Let's start by looking at the WSP operator scenario.
WSP stands for Wireless Internet Service Provider. So imagine you live somewhere really remote, maybe rural Montana or perhaps in a developing nation. You've invested in a Starlink dish, which gives you incredible speeds, but the monthly subscription is expensive. Meanwhile, your three closest neighbors can't get any decent service at all. You can use the Sentry Pro to basically broadcast a mesh Wi-Fi network to their houses.
And the Sentry manages all the traffic between them.
It manages absolutely everything. It handles the automated billing, the bandwidth throttling, the complex traffic shaping. It dynamically ensures that neighbor A downloading a massive 4K movie doesn't completely kill the connection for neighbor B, who is just trying to send a vital work email. It effectively turns you into a micro ISP. You charge your neighbors a small monthly fee, the router handles the accounting, and you effectively subsidize or split the cost of that Starlink connection.
Okay, when you frame it like that, it actually makes the $899 price tag look like a revenue-generating business investment rather than
Yes.
just an expensive consumer purchase.
Exactly. It changes the math completely. Then there is the second use case they highlight, the smart farm. Now, this one felt very specific when I first read it, but it actually points to a much broader trend in edge computing.
You're talking about the hemp-grade AI example in the notes.
Right. So if you are running a high-value agricultural operation, maybe industrial hemp or a high-end vineyard, really anything sensitive, you might be using high-definition cameras to grade the quality of your crop in real time on the conveyor belt.
But why do you need this specific router to do that? Why not just send the video feed to the cloud like everyone else does? AWS or Google Cloud can process that video in milliseconds.
Data sovereignty. That is the absolute key concept here. If you send your proprietary crop data to a public cloud, a competitor might somehow intercept it. Or worse, the cloud platform itself might claim ownership of your video data in their terms of service to train their own next-generation AI models. The Sentry Pro leverages its 32 gigabytes of RAM and that 8-core processor to run small language models, or SLMs, and computer vision models entirely locally.
They call it edge inference.
Yes. It grades the agricultural biomass right there on site. It automatically cryptographically stamps the quality grade onto the blockchain for supply chain verification. And the raw video feed itself never ever leaves the physical farm. It guarantees total privacy for your core business data.
That makes a lot of sense. You keep the secret sauce completely in-house. The third and final use case they outlined was the paranoid microgrid.
This one is clearly geared toward the off-grid prepper demographic. We're talking about someone running a highly complex solar power setup with multiple inverters and large battery banks. We tend to forget that modern solar inverters aren't just dumb electrical boxes anymore. They are full-blown computers. They are IoT gadgets. They run updatable firmware. They have IP addresses. And they are constantly talking out to the internet.
And as we've established, and as the Sentry operates on the assumption of, IoT devices are notoriously terribly insecure.
Beyond insecure. So this specific user employs the Kali VM to constantly and aggressively attack their own physical power grid infrastructure. They want to verify independently that a routine over-the-air firmware update from the solar panel manufacturer didn't accidentally introduce a backdoor into their power supply. They are taking total radical responsibility for their own critical infrastructure. If their power grid goes down, they want to know exactly why, and they don't want it to be because someone in another country found an open SSH port on their inverter.
It really all comes down to that one word, doesn't it? Sovereignty. You aren't blindly trusting the local power company. You aren't trusting the massive cloud providers. You aren't even trusting the original hardware manufacturer of your smart devices. You're verifying everything yourself.
Even if verifying it literally means hacking it yourself.
Let's pivot slightly to the actual business side of producing these things. We have a detailed bill of materials, or a BOOM, provided in the source text. It costs them roughly $529 in physical parts to build this box, and they turn around and sell it for $899. That represents roughly a 41% margin. Is that considered price gouging in this space?
In the realm of boutique consumer electronics, no, not at all. That is actually a pretty standard and honestly maybe even a bit modest margin. You really have to consider the specific manufacturing context of the Node 3 workshop. These aren't just being mass-produced by the millions in a massive overseas factory where they can optimize and save fractions of a penny on every single screw.
Right. The notes say they are assembled in Arizona.
Exactly. Hand-assembled. And remember that PTM 7950 phase change material we spent so much time talking about? Applying that correctly so it doesn't leak or fail requires incredible precision. It's a very delicate manual process. And then on top of assembly, there is the burn-in process.
Yeah, the mandatory stress test.
Before any single unit is shipped out to a customer, it runs a diagnostic script called stressing for a full 24 hours. They absolutely max out all 8 CPU cores doing intense matrix math just to ensure that the passive cooling chassis actually works under load and doesn't throttle. That level of QA takes physical warehouse space, it takes time, and it takes a lot of electricity.
So you're not just paying for the silicon, you're paying for the QA process. You're paying for the peace of mind, knowing it won't just mysteriously die on day 3 because a thermal pad wasn't seated properly.
Precisely. And perhaps even more importantly, you are paying for the incredibly complex software integration. Think about it. Setting up a bare metal hypervisor like Proxmox, perfectly configuring pfSense routing rules, setting up a secure crypto mining node, and safely sandboxing Kali Linux, and then getting all of those separate systems to reliably talk to each other without crashing the whole network. That is a long weekend of profound frustration for a seasoned IT expert, and it's frankly impossible for an enthusiastic novice.
It's what they call the civilization in a box concept.
Exactly. You are paying a premium for the flawless pre-configuration. You pull it out of the box, you plug it into the wall, and suddenly you are your own private bank, your own bespoke ISP, and your own dedicated cybersecurity team.
It really reminds me of the ethos of the early days of personal computing, like the Apple II or the Altair. It wasn't primarily about user-friendly convenience. It was entirely about raw capability and user control.
It is definitely designed for the power user who honestly feels a bit insulted by modern technology trends. Modern tech constantly tries to hide the inner workings from you. It says, don't worry your pretty little head about how this complex system works. Just click this shiny button and trust us. The Sovereign Sentry takes the exact opposite approach. It says, here's the raw, unfiltered data. Here are the dangerous tools. Good luck.
Here is a sword.
Exactly. Have at it.
I do want to touch on the visual aspect one last time before we wrap up, because the source document includes a generated image of the unit mounted inside a server rack. And it has this very specific lighting. They call it a cyberpunk blue rim light. Even sitting in a rack full of other servers, it completely stands out.
It is absolutely designed to be the visual centerpiece of a home lab. And if you notice, the sovereign key, the YubiKey, is resting right against it in that hero shot. It's a deeply psychological design choice. Physically holding that key makes you feel like the absolute administrator of your domain. It visually and tactically reinforces that core idea of digital ownership.
So just looking at the big picture here, we have this dense, heavy device that acts simultaneously as a decentralized bank, an aggressive guard dog, and an industrial stress tester. Is this really the future of home networking for everyone, or is it destined to just be a highly niche product for paranoid techies who happen to have $1,000 burning a hole in their pocket?
Well, it is certainly niche right now. There's no denying that. Most everyday people just want their Netflix to load without buffering, and that's fine. But the demographic of the paranoid, security-conscious user is undeniably growing. As our houses get smarter and fill up with more connected devices, they objectively get more vulnerable. I really think the fundamental idea of offensive defense, actually having a dedicated device that watches the watchman on your behalf, is going to inevitably become much more mainstream.
You actually think regular non-technical people will eventually have automated audit bots running in their homes?
Maybe not manually running Kali Linux scripts from a command line, but yes, conceptually, the idea of having a localized AI guardian that constantly checks your digital locks and politely says, hey, you left the digital window open on your smart thermostat, that is an incredibly compelling consumer proposition.
Wow.
We simply can't rely solely on the IoT device manufacturers to proactively secure us anymore. Recent history has shown us repeatedly that they won't do it.
It's a massive societal shift from implicitly trusting the corporate brand to independently trusting the cryptographic verification.
And that right there is the very essence of digital sovereignty.
We have definitely covered a massive amount of ground today, from the microscopic thermal physics of phase change materials all the way to the macroeconomics of running a micro ISP and the underlying philosophy of automated red teaming. It is an incredibly dense, fascinating piece of kit.
A dense piece of kit designed for an increasingly dense and complicated digital world, for sure.
I want to leave all of you listening with one final thought to mull over as you look at your own home routers. The marketing proudly calls this device the node that watches the watchman. For decades, we have willingly outsourced our digital trust to third parties, our ISPs, massive antivirus companies, ubiquitous cloud providers, just assuming they will keep us safe. But if we are reaching a point where the only way to be truly comprehensively secure is to purposefully automate a high-powered computer to relentlessly attack your own home network for your own good, what does that actually say about the current state of the internet we've built?
It says that blind trust is good, but radical verification is much, much better.
Thanks for taking this deep dive with us.
Stay sovereign out there.